And welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend here in the Nashville area. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm okay. So check out my screen right now. Check out what my screen says. Check it out. See that?
Don't lose your blue check.
Big thing. Don't lose your blue check. Now, I want you to guess what finger I'm holding up to my computer right now.
Could it be one Elon. That lands in the middle of your hand?
Read between the lines, Elon. How are you guys doing?
Even better now that you've started us off that way. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing great this morning, guys. Didn't work this weekend. Got the full Saturday, Sunday. My sister's in town.
Wow.
Fun weekend.
Hokie.
Fun weekend. Yes.
The young Hokie.
I should have worn it today. I got a nice VT sweatshirt. So
nice. I need a new one.
We love that. Yes.
Inner Sandman. There we go.
Yeah. You got to check that out soon now.
Yes. I'm already marking down a football game. I hear it's incredible to go to Virginia Tech for a football game. I mean, they used to be a little bit better than they are now, but very excited to check out that stadium.
Joe, did you watch just TV, eyes glued to the TV for the Masters all weekend? I know it's a big deal for you, Masters coming around.
Well, I mean, honestly, I did watch a fair amount of it yesterday. You know, we were at Katie's cousin's for Easter dinner, which we do every year. So fantastic. Shout out to the Matuijiks who, you know, just show up, make a couple things. I made a broccoli salad. Wasn't very good. The broccoli salad wasn't very good. I was very disappointed in my broccoli salad.
Wow.
And, you know, you show up, eat a bunch of food, and leave. It's a wonderful thing. But, yeah, the Masters was on. So I watched. I mean, I saw Phil making a little run.
He
and
did.
It's like, okay, this is interesting. And then all of a sudden, you know, Rahm just blew everybody away. And Koepka just faded badly. But, yeah, I watched actually a decent amount of it. But I've always been a Sunday major watcher.
For sure.
Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, if you got something good going on the Sunday of a major, all right, I'll check it out.
It was kind of painful to watch Tiger this weekend. He had to withdraw yesterday, and he got to the end of the day Saturday, and, like, he could barely walk out there. So that was not good. And
it's too bad.
If you listen to him talk, like, it's something that really is not ever going to get all that much better. Like, he just, you know, it's his leg. It kind of is what it is at this point. So not good from Tiger.
No, I mean, I appreciate him trying, you know,
continuing
to try.
He made the cut.
Yeah.
So that streak is alive, 23 straight at the Master, but could not finish and had to withdraw from the tournament. John Rahm ends up winning the Masters. Joe, the Nashville Predators in action over the weekend as well. We talked about it a lot on Friday, a big game against the Jets, and they had a chance to really make some noise and find themselves in a playoff spot. Were they able to take down the Jets in regulation on Saturday? And it just never happened for the Predators. They got beat 2-0, got shut out on the road at Winnipeg, and basically they were on their heels and playing defense the whole game. I mean, they had maybe a good look here or there throughout the course of the game, and the first period was okay. I think they outshot Winnipeg 8-7 in the first period. From that on, Second period was crazy, and they just really never got close after that. And you lose 2-0, and because of that, I mean, you've got to win all three of these games this week and get a little bit of help if you've got any chance, if you're the Predators. So the tragic number, we talk about the magic number to make the playoffs, tragic number is 3 for the Predators. So any combination of the Predators losing out on points or the Winnipeg Jets gaining points, all it takes is 3. And the row that we talk about, regulation overtime wins, Preds have no chance there. They have 29 in the row. Winnipeg's at 34, so they can't catch them that way. So basically, like, you've got to see if you can get to 94 points, and Winnipeg, who is at 91 right now, only gets to 93. That's the only path you got if you're the Predators, which is not likely.
Yeah. I think that game was a pretty good – because I think in the second – I think it was 20-5 shots in the second period, and it was – that did not – reflect what the overwhelming that was done by the Jets at the Preds' expense. I think that game was a good reminder for everyone, like, they shouldn't be where they are, you know? Like, they shouldn't be here. Good on them for being here.
Absolutely.
This is what they are, and that's a much more talented right now who's on the ice and seasoned NHL team they played at home and played like it, you know? And 2-0 is really – largely because of the guy who was largely responsible for them being here at all right now.
Yeah, I mean, he was incredible again on Saturday. And look, the first goal, Shifley scored it, and you could kind of it kind of felt like a backbreaker. Like, I was over at my parents' house, and the first one went in, and it was in the second period. And usually when one goal goes in, I'm like, okay. I mean, you got to score one to win anyway. But the one at that time, the way the game was going, I was like, yeah, it could be it. And they get the other one later as they're kind of just swarming the Predators there. And it just never really felt like the Predators had a chance in that game to get anything going offensively. And like I said, now, I mean, you've got a game tonight against Calgary. You have to win out if you're the Predators. I mean, it's you've got three games left. You've got a three-point margin one way or the other with you either gaining three or losing out on three or Winnipeg gaining three. Like, you've got to win the rest of these games, and that's going to be a heck of a challenge starting tonight against Calgary. But for all intents and purposes, like, their playoff chances are hanging on by the smallest of threads right now.
Yeah, so, you know, you basically look at it like, hey, this is it. I mean, tonight is it. You know, you lose this tonight, and I think we can stop.
It's over.
Yeah, we can stop talking about the playoffs. But, you know, you win tonight, and you at least apply pressure. I mean, first of all, you basically dust the Flames out of there, you know. I mean, if the Flames lose at home to the Preds tonight, the Flames are basically done.
They're in trouble.
Yeah. And I think Winnipeg does have a
– well, Winnipeg's got San Jose coming up next, which is their home finale. Now, they lost to San Jose 2 weeks ago. Now, that does – you know, San Jose's not good.
No.
But they got San Jose coming up tonight in their home finale. And then they're on the road at Minnesota tomorrow and on the road at Colorado. So they end the season with the same two opponents that the Predators end the season with, the difference being that Winnipeg is on the road while the Predators are at home. Now, the Predators also have a back-to-back there. You know, it's not totally impossible that Winnipeg could win tonight and then lose the next two in regulation. Yeah. I mean, that could absolutely happen. But still, that doesn't change the equation if you're the Predators, that if they win tonight, you literally have to win every game. Like, you have to win Calgary, Minnesota, and Colorado. Got to beat all of them.
Yeah. So, win tonight and, you know, win tonight and expect them to beat San Jose. And then basically, okay, sweep Minnesota, Colorado. Minnesota, Colorado sweep them. There you go.
I mean, what's crazier things have happened.
What's the percentage chance right now? Are they at like 2-something now?
2.2, I believe.
2.2? Okay. And if they would have won Saturday, they'd be like 40-something, right?
It'd be, I mean, like it'd be like probably in the 30s or 40s, yeah, for sure. So, I mean, look, the playoffs, I think you're right. I think we got a good reminder on Saturday that – and this was kind of the same way in the last Winnipeg game too, for whatever reason – like the Predators, the last time they played Winnipeg at home in that big game, they played okay in the first period and really were just kind of hanging on after that. Now, they got it to overtime in that game and they got a point. But, they were just – that game could have been 7-0 on Saturday, and that's just kind of what it was. Now, we've seen the Predators look like that, and then the next game they come out and they play pretty well. So maybe tonight against Calgary they're coming out and they're going to look really good. I have no idea, but – the young guys, I mean, it was a – at times on Saturday, it was like, man, are they going to get this thing out of the zone? Like, they were just pinned in there for what felt like 5 minutes at a time. In all actuality, it was probably 45 seconds at a time. But that's a long time to be pinned in there in the NHL, down in your own zone. And they were digging deep on Saturday. Lots of long shifts in there.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, it's – and this is where I feel like that game – and, I mean, before it too, but I feel like in that game in particular, like, had Josi been able to come back,
yeah,
you know, just that alone could have been a spark. You know, they really needed something like that. And I think – I don't know. I mean, I guess anything could happen this week. But
at this point, doesn't it kind of feel like nobody's coming back?
Yeah.
Like, it just – it kind of is what it is. Like, you've got a week left in the regular season, and –
unless it's tonight when it's
that
last stand and someone's actually ready, which would only be him, I think.
Well, yeah, like it feels like the Forsbergs and the Parsonens and the Carriers and all those guys of the world, Duchesne, like, what's the point at this point? I mean, it doesn't feel like they're close, number one. So if they're not close, they're not coming back this week. Like, Yossi's the one guy that we keep waiting on. And look, I wondered on Saturday, like, was that going to be it? Would that, you're 1 point out of the playoff spot, you know, if he's ready to go, would you see him? But clearly he's not ready to go. Like, this idea, and I heard from some more Predators fans like after the game, like, why are they shutting down Josi? And I'm like, well, I don't think they are. I just don't think he's ready. Like, if he was ready to play, I don't know why you wouldn't have played him in that game if he wasn't ready to play. You're 1 point out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, look, the messaging on him, and not just the messaging, but also the actions. Like if they were shutting him down and they knew all along, he would not have traveled a couple weeks ago. Like,
no.
He's
been skating.
And the way Poile has talked about it, you know, in recent weeks here, they thought he was coming back. So, again, if you are dealing with concussions, if you are, that stuff can be very unpredictable, and you can feel like you're progressing, and then you just don't hit check all the boxes, and until you check all the boxes, you're not coming back.
Exactly, and I think that's, you know, reading between the lines, maybe where they are with a couple of guys in there that are out of their lineup right now, and at this point, you got 3 games left, and your regular season ends on Friday, so you're running out of time for that to even make sense anymore if you're the Predators with one of those guys coming back. And you got to win tonight. I mean, all you can do, really, you try to win the game tonight, and then you let the chips fall where they may after that. I mean, look, we saw San Jose shut out Winnipeg 3-0 a couple weeks ago. Maybe they can come up with another effort tonight, and they win the game, and then all of a sudden things look a little bit different heading into Thursday and Friday here if you're the Predators. But all you can do is, I mean, you got to worry about you. You got to take care of this business tonight. And the mindset, I think, has to be, if you're the Predators, we have to win all 3 of these games coming up. And if you don't do that, you're not getting in the playoffs.
Yeah. And obviously, if they lose tonight, you know, then you got 2 home games to wrap it up. You know, going into the weekend, it's like, wow, how big could those games be? They may mean nothing. Just winning tonight at least keeps it so that, you know, at least that first one has a lot of meaning, which would be cool for the fans to be able to have a big game like that.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We are off and running on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds, their loss to the Winnipeg Jets, the game coming up tonight against Calgary as well. We'll take your thoughts on all of that. We'll also get into Jeffrey Simmons signing a contract extension with the Tennessee Titans coming up as well. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Yep. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I thought you said something.
No.
No.
There was like a weird sound. What happened? What happened there, Michelle?
I'm editing one of your FanDuels. So, yes, we did just hear Joe's voice.
I could have sworn I heard Joe say something. I thought he had something to offer.
But no, it was not live.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
Well, you know, bonus butts coming your way.
Well, there could be. Got a few text messages about that on Friday.
Yeah, I bet.
It's pretty good.
Let's forget it ever happened.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Now, one thing I will say, the Predator, we talked about it, the playoff chances at this point for the Predators are very low, and it's going to take extremely fortunate events, including probably winning every one of your games this week, in order to get in there. And obviously we know that is an unlikely scenario for the Predators. Now, I see this happen a lot in sports, so the expectations go out the door, right, at the deadline, and then the injuries take place, and you're like, all right, well, they're not going to make the playoffs. That's what kind of the conversation was at the deadline of, they're selling off, they're not going to make the playoffs, they're building for the future. And then all of a sudden, they kind of scratch and claw and get themselves to like the doorstep of the playoffs, where they're 1 point out heading into the game on Saturday, and all of a sudden the expectations kind of like creep back in from the fan base, and now there's disappointment with losing that game on Saturday. And I get it. I don't think that not making the playoffs really changes the way that I view the way the young guys have played all that much. Like, I think the fact that they're even remotely in this conversation after what all has gone down, not only with the deadline, but with the injuries, I think has been a really good accomplishment. And I think we've learned a lot about some of these younger guys and some of the stuff they've got to them with Evangelista and Novak. And, you know, look, I think Tyson Berry has come in, and he's led really well from the blue line. McDonough, we've talked about him. But some of the young guys like Glass and Evangelista and Novak and Tomasino and these guys, I think we've learned that they can play, and they can play at this level. Now, there's still a consistency level offensively that right now, I mean, this team just they don't have. And they're going to have to find a way to grow into that as they move forward here. I guess what I'm saying is I understand that the expectations kind of creep back in there a little bit last week in terms of getting back to a playoff spot. But it doesn't really, to me, if they don't make it, change the overall view. Like, as soon as they decided to sell, that was the decision that they went with, and that was the, all right, well, they're selling. They're going to take a step back. And I think the young guys have come in, and they've played pretty well. Where right now, like, trying to figure out what this roster is going to look like, and we got plenty of time to discuss that through the summer, but trying to figure out what this is going to look like next year is really interesting, and it's way more intriguing than I thought it would be based on the way some of these young guys have played since they've come up.
Yeah. Yeah, well, first of all, yeah, you gotta still keep it in perspective. You're right. You know, hopes kind of return. Hopes get lifted a little bit, and then you have a game like that, kind of a sobering look at, you know, the difference right now between a playoff team playing like they're in a playoff game and you.
Yeah.
You know, but you got to keep it. I mean, again, they should not be. It should not have been an interesting game. It should not have mattered. And the fact that the Preds made it matter this late was actually impressive. And, yeah, I think that look, there are some – I don't know where it's all going to fit or what Barry Trotz is going to do in his first offseason as GM in terms of going after trying to find some veteran pieces to shore things up and, you know, think about making the playoffs next year or, you know, next year is the year to really see what you have with certain guys. And in the process of doing that, you may not be as competitive as you're used to being. You know, I don't know. I would guess it'd be the second of that, but it doesn't have to be.
No. Yeah, I'm intrigued by that too. Like I wonder how much more, I don't know if selling is the right word, but maybe changing the guard is the right phrase this offseason could take place. Like with Johansson, I mean, one of Johansson or Duchesne are going to be here. Like you can't. I still don't think you could trade either one of them unless you're eating a whole bunch of the salary. You may buy one of them out, but one of them at least is going to be here. We know Forsberg is going to be here. We know Yossi's going to be here. You know, the Carrier decision, I would assume he's going to be back. So that's a lot of veteran guys that have been out of the lineup that are going to be a part of the lineup next year. So trying to figure out who that is and who's not going to be here, but also where they slot in the lineup, is going to be really interesting. Like, let's say that they don't have any appetite to buy out a Johansson or to buy out a Duchesne, and both of them are back. Well, like, I think Duchesne's a little bit easier to slot because he's played on the wing for you the last couple of years, so you can just put him back on the wing. Like, if Ryan Johansson's back, I don't know how you say, yep, top six, put him back in there. I know he's getting paid a lot, so I guess that's how you say it. But based on the way that Glass has played down the stretch, Novak has played, but not only the way that they've played, like giving them opportunity to see what they are. Like, I think that's the most important thing. Like, Novak has played great. I don't know that I'm convinced yet that he's a top six centerman moving forward for this group. We'll see. But in order to figure that out, you got to let him play and see if he can continue to handle that role for you as you move forward here. Same thing with Glass.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. And you know, also with Johansson, Johansson is still like he's 30. You know, he's not like 35.
No, he'll be 31 in July.
But he's 30. He's had another serious injury here, and yeah, you know, the performance has been pretty erratic. I mean, although he was good last year. I mean, you know, last year 63 points, 79 games. You know, that was a huge response bounce back year for him. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's like, do you just sort of bury him somewhere in the lineup? Because obviously Novak's been a great story. I still also think that down the road for the Preds to really, you know, come back, there's probably another centerman somewhere that we don't know about that's going to be here, right?
I think so.
So, yeah, it's a fascinating question. And, again, I do think that the buyout scenario is possible there, especially if it's more of the, yeah, let's really get a look next year and really know what we have and then proceed.
And then, of course, there's the conversation of this: if this week is it, which it's looking like it's going to be, and this is the last week of the regular season and no playoffs for the Predators, what does all that mean for John Hines when you factor in the whole picture of the disappointing start to the season? Obviously, they reached a point where they made the decision to sell off. You know, he got some good things out of the young guys down the stretch, and they made things interesting until the final week of the regular season. He's got 1 year left on his contract after this. What does all that mean for John Hines as it relates to Barry Trotz? I don't know the answer based on some conversations that I've had. I think that there's a strong chance that maybe he's coming back next year, but I don't know that for sure. What does all this mean for John Hines at the end of the day here too? If this is it this week and Friday's their last game and it's the end of the regular season and there's not going to be any playoffs, what does all this mean for John Hines as Barry Trotz kind of finishes his evaluation of the job he's done this year? I don't know.
Thank you for sparking a mini rant I wanted to make this.
Oh, morning. Good.
So do you know George Scoville?
I do.
You do know George?
Yeah, yeah, I know. Okay. George.
Okay. So this is what George said on, I guess, Friday to both of us on Twitter. Good old Twitter. Quote, just catching up on your Hines segment from this morning. Y'all nibbled around the edges of this, but I'll put a bow on it. Great goaltending will make any head coach look like a genius, but if you look at the results of the rest, it's clear Hines sucks. And he also said, not surprised to hear at it's Govertime. That's Jeremy K. Gover. Say the same. So just to be clear, George, I think you're confusing, quote, nibbling around the edges with, quote, I don't have the same opinion you have. I mean, I'll speak for myself. I don't think he's terrible and actually should be fired, but I'm on here like, well, but, you know, John Hines, nice guy. No, I don't agree with you. So if you think he sucks, that's fine. That can be your opinion, and I know some people have that opinion. I don't share that opinion. Now, do I think he's, you know, going about to have a Scotty Bowman-like trajectory as an NHL coach? I mean, I have my doubts about that too. I think his performance is yes, you're right. Soros has, I think, covered up a lot of things, but he's also covered up the roster issues.
Correct.
Does he just cover up the head coach, or does he also cover up roster issues? Because I think that John Hines' performance has been in line with what he's had to work with here.
Well, look, there's the John Hines discussion is really fascinating to me because I guess it always gets to one of two extremes. Like, if you like John Hines, I guess you think that he's like the next John Cooper or something coming in here, and they're just going to roll off some cups coming up. And if you don't like him, you think that he's like the worst head coach in the history of the league, which is not true either. Like, I just – there's a middle ground. Here's what I feel about John Hines. I think John Hines is a good coach. I don't know that he's a great coach, and I don't know that he's going to be here this time a year from now. Like, there are all sorts of good coaches in the NHL. They get fired. Like, it happens. And now you change your general manager. The odds are, this time a year from now, he probably won't be here. I mean, when you change the general manager, it's just what the math tells me. So
wait a minute. Wait. I just want to butt in. Okay. But you just said you're getting the feeling that he will be here.
A year from now is what I said.
So in other words, you're saying after next season, it's likely he'd be gone. But you think he'll get one more year.
That is what the math tells me, yes. Okay.
Just because of the contract.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, that is a thing to keep in mind. And again, I think a lot more in this league than the other league we primarily talk about is like team, you know, there's a lot less pay people to go away in the NHL.
There's a lot less of that. And look, I've said this. Now, I don't think that this scenario applies to Barry Trotz because his situation here is a little bit different. But I was telling somebody this the other day, like if I was a GM and I had a head coach with 1 year left on the contract, I'd never fire him because basically you could just fire him next year and that buys you another year as the GM. Like, well, didn't go well. It was the coach. We're going to hire the new coach. That's the way I would do it if I was the GM. Like I said, I don't think that applies to Barry Trotz because a little bit different situation with him here. I'm just saying.
I think if I was the GM, I'd always fire everybody right away. I'd just be firing people.
I'd be a terrible GM. I'd be trying to figure out how long I could stay there. Like, no, we'll just wait a year, then I'll fire him. Give me another year.
But then what if he wins a cup? Then you can't fire him.
Then you hire him to a contract extension.
Yeah.
look like a
it's
genius.
It's actually pretty easy. It's an easy job if you really think about
it. Just hand it to me. I'm available for hire. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will get into Jeffrey Simmons and the contract extension with the Tennessee Titans. What a deal for Jeffrey Simmons and the Titans, and what a relief for Titans fans. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Check out Nashville's best deal of the week. It's Joyland in East Nashville. You can get half off a $30 gift card at thegamenashville.com/deals and enjoy the best burger in town. You can find some joy today and eat Joyland for half off with Nashville's best deal of the week at thegamenashville.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. And somebody who probably doesn't need a deal going into Joyland would be Jeffrey Simmons based on his new contract. Lots of money coming through for Jeffrey Simmons. Teron Davenport putting it out there on Friday that the Titans and Jeffrey Simmons agreeing in principle to a four-year contract extension. And then Ian Rappaport coming out with the details after that. $94 million is the deal, $66 million in guarantees, including a $24 million signing bonus. So the Titans and Jeffrey Simmons have come to a deal. Some nice, I guess, Twitter games from Jeffrey Simmons before the deal, basically.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Making it look like, I guess, he was like leaving and then says, but we're not done yet, coming back, and has now signed the extension with the Tennessee Titans. So 4 years, $94 million, $66 million guaranteed. A relief for many Titans fans to get this deal done with Jeffrey Simmons. What do you make of the contract for Big Jeff with the Titans?
Yeah, I think it's good for both sides. And yeah, it makes it seem like he's leaving and then basically tells everybody he's staying.
Yes.
And, you know, the $66 million, that's the thing. You know, sometimes, like, yeah, a lot of times that's up to 66 in guarantee. So, you know, the signing bonus is what you know is guaranteed. But right. I think all the numbers are right in line with what you'd expect. And I think that had the Titans waited, Quinnen Williams would have had, you know, Quinnen Williams may have pushed the price up depending on how important it is for Jeff to be paid higher than anybody not named Aaron Donald. Right now that's the case. You know, Quinnen Williams may surpass him. But whatever, the deal is done now. I think it's a big deal for, you know, just like for Rand Carthon in his first offseason as GM to just get it done, you know, and have that as a dub on the resume. It's an important thing. I mean, it's huge for the Titans to think about that 2019 class. We talk about it so much. Like, it's the last great draft class for the Tennessee Titans, which is part of why they are where they are right now, and they have a new GM right now. But how you have a great draft class and you only have a second contract with one of those guys, your fourth round pick, Amani Hooker. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, look, AJ Brown and Jeff Simmons should both be here on their second deals, but at least they got one of the two.
They did. And they got a guy that, as we know, I mean, when he's healthy, is one of the best defensive tackles in the league. Now, obviously we know what happened last year. He was fighting through the ankle all year long, but still for the most part, other than really the Dallas game where they shut people down, was out there and was available and was pushing through things for the Titans. And the thing about this from his standpoint is that's interesting is if he plays well through this deal, he could get another one. I mean, he's 25. He'll be 26 at the end of July. So 4 years, that puts him through, you know, you'd be 30, 31 in that area if you're Jeffrey Simmons. Could you get another deal at that point? We'll see. We're a long way off from that.
He'll get another deal. It won't be this level.
It won't be probably this level, but he'll get – I mean, if you play well, get a year or two of pretty good money.
Yeah, I mean, he could still be a viable player in the league for sure. But, yeah, this is the one. You know, this is the moneymaker in this league, the second deal, and he's set, you know. So, good for him. And, you know, I think Jeffrey Simmons is the type of guy who – yeah, that getting paid now, you know, that's not going to be any sort of performance, you know, deterrent for him. I mean, he is beyond competitive.
He's beyond competitive, and you know, one of those guys that you feel pretty good about handing the big contract to in terms of the work ethic and all that. And what's really good, I think, from the Titans standpoint is this thing didn't drag out. Number one, because what you were talking about, I mean, if it did, maybe the price eventually goes up on Jeffrey Simmons. But number two, like, you didn't want to get into training camp and is he going to hold out of training camp? Is he going to skip out on all that stuff? Now you don't have to worry about any of that. He's got the deal done, and he'll be there, and he'll be ready to go coming up in the fall, which eliminates a distraction that you got. And like you said, I mean, this is really the first big deal and big move that Rand Carthon has had to sort out, and to get that done before you really have to worry about things, even heading into the draft or all that other stuff, I think is really important for Rand Carthon.
Right, and now the team that you're going to trade Simmons to on draft night knows exactly what they can they can plug the numbers in.
Exactly.
They know exactly what you're dealing with.
So you can go get Bryce Young, of course, you know.
Hey, sign and trade, baby.
Jeff, I know we've signed you to this deal, but how do you think you'd look in an Arizona Cardinals uniform? let's go try that out, just for sakes.
You liked Monty, right?
Yeah,
he was that dude. He was walking around the building sometimes. He said hi to you a couple times, Monty. Yeah, he's your new GM.
Well, I mean, look, and then on the – you know that Jeffrey Simmons is there, and yet you fortified your defensive front. I mean, you've got DeNico Autry coming back next year. I mean, the Tierra Tart part of this as well. I mean – I still look at that side of the ball, and I know that they've got questions in the secondary and, what's the future of the Christian Fulton contract going to look like? You know, all those things that we've still got to answer, the Kevin Byard pay cut situation that we've discussed. But I still look at the defensive side of the ball and think that they've got a chance to be pretty good next year. And I don't know what that means in terms of their win total. Like, they're going to have a much better performance offensively to get back into the playoffs next year, and there's still a lot of work left to be done on that side of the ball. But you got to find a way to replace Bud Dupree, maybe get another edge rusher. But other than that, right now I'm looking at that defense, and I think it has the chance to be pretty good once again next year for the Titans.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You look at the defense, you look at the best-case scenario, you think about a healthy defense, Autry, like an Autry maintain. For a third straight year, he had the injury last year, and he still came back earlier than you thought and was good. But can he be the monster difference maker he was before he went down in that night in Green Bay? I mean, if you get your best case scenario, and it's not like it's like a bunch of outlandish things, well, that defense is too good, or you could at least argue that it's too good to try to sacrifice the offense next year. That's the case for Tannehill, Henry, and trying to fix things as well as you can. Like, can you win a bunch of 20-17 games next year?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. What I'd really like to know, and I did not keep up with this after we talked about it when he first did it, but remember the discussion of the, oh man, Jeffrey Simmons has shut down his social media accounts. Like, I'd love to know, when did he fire it back up? Was it like right before he sent his tweet, or did he wait until the contract was signed to fire the Twitter account back up? I don't know. I didn't keep up with it.
Is that what he did? I forgot about that. So he
shut him down.
He shut down the
all social media.
All social
media. It's
gone. Now wait a minute. Now when you're saying he shut down his accounts, or he took the Titan stuff off his account?
He shut down his account. Both. Yeah.
The whole like take the team down stuff.
Wait, did you guys?
It doesn't really mean anything anymore. You know what I mean?
Did you see the Tennessee Titans Instagram post?
No.
They had a
shocked from as I say no.
it was great. They had a screenshot and it says Jeffrey Simmons is now following you.
No, oh,
because I guess he unfollowed their account during all
funny.
Of this.
That's
this.
Funny.
So
he refollowed them.
That's yeah,
good to know.
Refollowed
really nice.
Them.
That's
and then
nice.
They just like took a screenshot of it and posted it.
You know, I guess if you give me $100 million, I'll follow you.
I'll give you a follow.
I might even like if someone gives me $100 million, I might even start an Insta. Not TikTok.
So I
don't care. I'm not doing Snapchat.
So I guess that means he did wait until the contract was done to fire it back up on social media.
There you go. That's funny. That's actually pretty good on the Titans part. Who would that have been? That Nate Bain?
Nate.
Yeah, that's pretty clever.
So now, I mean, just chalk another one up. I'd love to know the success rate of the, everybody freaks out when a player unfollows a team on social media, but by my recent count, most of them end up back with that team anyway, other than, A.J. Brown, that didn't work out so well.
He got traded.
He got traded.
Yeah. I mean, Kyler, everything's all
peachy
good.
Down there. Yeah.
I guess it's just a thing that agents tell players to do, right?
I guess they so. Just, which is just wild.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what we really need you to do? Scrap your social media, or even better, leave it and take away any connection that you have with your team.
Yeah, take a picture of yourself in like some random, USFL hat or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Like what? I don't know, man. I don't know. These kids today. But Jeffrey Simmons, you know, good for him and the Titans.
Good for him.
I think it's a win for both sides.
I think it's a win for both sides, too. And, look, it's like you said, I think from a fan base standpoint, and not that you can really make your decisions based solely off that, but, like, if you had lost A.J. Brown, and I know it's a different general manager, but if you had traded away A.J. Brown and then you were fumbling around the Jeffrey Simmons contract heading into next year, like, if he wasn't signed by training camp, I wouldn't blame some Titans fans for being like, what are they doing? Like, what exactly is going on here? And I know it's two different players, two different positions, two different general managers. But I think just from an organizational standpoint, getting it done now serves them really well.
Well, and it is. Again, it's a different GM, but everybody else is basically back. And I'm sure there's a little bit of PTSD about last year. It was right around this time last year where Vrabel went on whatever interview, like, well, not as long as I'm coach. He's decking up, you know, I mean, it was all, and we know how it all went down. So I'm sure there's a little bit of, you know, maybe sleeping at night a little easier now. Just get that done.
Get that done. And Jeffrey Simmons, I mean, we've talked about this. Like, had the Titans wanted to, he could have played this year, and then you could have franchised him next year and wouldn't have really had that long-term security. And it's the NFL, so, I mean, the 4 years is not really a guaranteed thing if you're Jeffrey Simmons. But, look, as long as he stays relatively healthy, like, with his level of production and the player that he is at his age, like, I don't see any reason why he couldn't play through this contract and get every last bit of that if you're Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah. No, I think exactly. I mean, that's the thing. You know, he had the ankle this year, so that's not great. That's the first real thing he's really had.
Yep.
If he's good, this will be a nice bargain by the end of this deal.
615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Titans signing Jeffrey Simmons. Also get to some interesting odds related to the Tennessee Titans that I found yesterday on the FanDuel Sportsbook as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We've discussed Jeffrey Simmons re-signing with the Tennessee Titans, 4 years, $94 million, $66 million in guarantees, $24 million signing bonus. So shout out to friend of the show, Teron Davenport, for reporting that on Friday. Good scoop by TD there. Jeffrey Simmons back with the Tennessee Titans. We'll take your thoughts on that all show at 615-737-1025. But, Joe, I was scooping around on the FanDuel Sportsbook app last night, my favorite sportsbook app, by the way, and I was looking at just where the Titans kind of sit right now in terms of the pecking order of the odds out there. As we know, there's still some work to do, and the draft's coming up here later this month, and we'll see what the receiving core looks like. Right now, it's hard to picture a worse receiving core around the National Football League than the Titans currently have. They're still in second in terms of the odds to win the AFC South behind the Jacksonville Jaguars. But I just took a look. You know, you've got your early odds on who's going to win the AFC title and come out of the AFC. And I was like, okay, I wonder where the Titans stack up in the entire AFC picture right now, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. And you got your usual suspects at the top. The Chiefs, the Bengals, and the Bills are the top three teams, and those are the favorites to come out. You've got the Jets after the Bills because everybody just assumes that Aaron Rodgers' deal is going to get done at some point. And you go down the list, and I was like, okay, well, there's Cleveland, and there's Baltimore, and there's Denver. Oh, there's the Patriots. Where in the heck are the Titans in this thing? Oh, there's the Steelers. Finally, you get to the Tennessee Titans at plus 5,000 odds to win the AFC title, which are the third worst odds in the entire AFC. Down the list, only two teams that are worse odds than the Tennessee Titans are the Houston Texans, which have the longest odds at plus 10,000, and the Indianapolis Colts, which are at plus 6,000. Other than that, the Steelers, the Raiders, the Patriots, the Broncos, the Ravens, the Browns, all those teams in front of the Titans in terms of the odds to win the AFC title And then, of course, you got the Chargers, then the Dolphins, and the Jags up towards the top two. But the Titans, the third worst odds in the entire conference to win the AFC Championship as of today on FanDuel Sportsbook.
It's really interesting. So a few things on that. First of all, I do, I think sometimes with Vegas, I believe this, I think sometimes odds and lines are dictated a little bit by fan base size. So some people would look at that like it's disrespect from Vegas and they're just trying to get people, trying to get people to bet. That might be worth a couple bucks. Plus 5,000 odds?
Plus 5,000.
I mean, what if these offensive linemen are good and they just absolutely hit gold at receiver in the draft? And
get
like
a chance.
Tana Henry is vintage Tana Henry. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, it might be worth, throwing a couple bucks on that.
I mean, look,
it's still somewhat stunning to see where some of the teams they're behind.
Well, obviously, FanDuel doesn't think very highly of the AFC South. I mean, deservedly so. Know that. Even Jacksonville, who is their division favorite, when you start to get into the whole AFC part of it, they're in seventh. Like, they have the seventh best odds. So, they don't think very highly of the AFC South, which I understand. But, it was surprising to me. I was like, oh, okay, so the Patriots and the Raiders and the Steelers. Like, think what you will about the Patriots. Like, they've got some good pieces on defense and – you got Juju Smith-Schuster there now, and we'll see about Mac Jones. But it's also like part of what should work in the Titans' favor is they have what you would think would be a better chance to make the playoffs because their division is trash, right? Like you've got a chance to get there. Whereas if you're New England, it's like, okay, we got Miami, Buffalo, and maybe Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in the same division, and a team like the Broncos, who were just awful last year. You got Kansas City at the top of it. You got the Chargers up there, and yet the Broncos are plus 2,500 odds to win the AFC Championship, and the Titans are at plus 5,000. I mean, according to FanDuel, the Broncos are twice as likely to win the AFC than the Tennessee Titans.
That is wild. But yeah, like I would, you think about the investment there, just those two teams, such a better idea to bet on the Titans than the Broncos.
Yeah.
You get double the odds, and the Broncos are,
Sean Payton is just boy genius coming in there, and he's going to
– just ask him.
Well, for sure. He thinks he is, for sure.
Yeah. It's – man. But it's also – I mean, it is a glimpse at right now, at this very moment, the Titans offensively look really limited.
Yeah, they do. Look, I think the win totals that I've seen – and FanDuel doesn't have a specific win total for the Titans right now that I've seen – but I've seen a few more sportsbook out there, and I think most of them have been at over under 7.5. Like, that's where the line has been for the Titans. So, I mean, obviously, the expectations are that the Titans are not going to be very good next year. And I can't say that I necessarily disagree with that based on the way the roster looks right now on the offensive side of the ball. Now, what it looks like at the end of the draft and once training camp rolls around, we'll see. But I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of people picking the Titans to make the playoffs by the time this next year comes around, regardless of what they do in the draft and the rest of free agency.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything in the draft that would change that. Now, there's things in the draft that could get Titans fans excited.
I think
probably starting with picking a QB.
Yeah.
But then the over-under goes to like 5.5, right?
Especially if Tannehill's not going to play, then yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. If Tannehill moving out is part of it, then that. But I think this, again, it's just like the constant argument until we figure out what they're going to do of what should they do.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the sportsbook odds of what exactly is going to happen in the conference title race or the division race, I mean, they don't mean a whole lot. Like, it's not like Vrabel sitting there like, oh, man, the odds. The odds are telling us that
– he might be.
Well, maybe he is. Yeah. The odds are telling us we just don't have any chance to get out of the AFC this year.
I mean, he might tell his team about it.
They very well might do that. Now, that could be something. But, like, even the odds, like, on the division, like, the Jags are minus 150 to win the South. Titans are at plus 340. Colts at plus 500. And the Texans at plus 850. So, Titans are still in second in the South.
Damn.
There you go.
Okay.
That's
is that easily, like, what about on those odds in the NFC? Like, is AFC South, based on those odds, clearly the least respected division in all of football?
I would say, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the NFC North, but yeah.
That's true. That. I mean, if the Detroit Lions are picked by anyone to win a particular division, boy, does that division suck.
They are the betting favorite. Look, the NFC South. The NFC South is not a respected division, but, I mean, they're all kind of like right there together because nobody knows what exactly it's going to be. So the odd discrepancy is more in the AFC South than it would be in the NFC South.
Yeah, so if you combine them, the AFC and NFC South, boy.
Could be some special football.
Pro football in the South is struggling, folks.
Could be some special football this year in the South. Look, rarely do divisions play out the way that we think that they're going to in terms of the strength of one division. Like, what did we talk about last year? Oh, my goodness, the AFC West. Like, it's just going to be unbelievable. And they're going to have four playoff teams in the AFC West, and everybody else is going to have to deal with them. And then at the end of the day, it was basically the Chiefs, and then the Chargers got in the playoffs, and that was it. So it's like, okay. So it was nowhere near what we thought it was going to be.
The greatest division of all time.
Right. Yeah. So, look, I'm not saying that that means that the AFC South is about to be some juggernaut next year. But I'm just saying, like, how we feel about a division in April, and even in last year's case, how we feel about a division in September heading into the year, normally doesn't always play out that way.
Kyle Trask about to take this league over, baby.
I mean, just ask Jason Light, which nobody's asked him that yet that I've seen. If you told me that Kyle Trask was the best quarterback in the division, then you went out and signed Baker Mayfield. What are we doing?
Baker's his backup.
Maybe.
Baker's a good backup. Good QB, too. Good signing. He can help Trask, you know, help develop Trask into the Pro Bowler that he's destined to be.
Maybe so. I'm interested to see what happens.
God, well, that division is cheeks, isn't it?
But, it's awful. I'm trying to think, though, like, is there – we talked about wide receiver. Obviously, the offense is what people look at with the Titans, and they think, oh, boy, just not very good. Like, is there a wide receiving core right now that is comparable to the Titans in terms of just – they just have nothing that's proven at this point?
Well, I would have said the Baltimore Ravens, but now they've changed a little bit. I mean, go around. I feel like everybody has at least one – semi-proven, pretty good receiver. As I look at team through, I mean, even although who do the Texans have? Because Cooks is gone now.
They got Robert Woods.
They do. Well, yeah, that is true.
Texans, I think, is comparable. It's pretty bad. But even like the Colts, right? Like they've got Pittman Jr. And they got Pierce, who played well at times last year.
I mean, yeah, it's flat out better than the Titans situation. Yeah, and, you know, Burks and Phillips this year, good sophomore years, and that's good. You need that. But, yeah, you look around the rest of the league, there's just about everybody has at least one guy. Philly has a couple. Pretty good players.
Yes, they do.
As I look at the rosters.
615-737-1025. Speaking of wide receivers, as Joe mentioned, Baltimore – adding to the wide receiving core yesterday with a very intriguing player that I'm very fascinated to see how this one's going to go in Baltimore. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.